From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com, is where you can pick up the newly uploaded podcast. And my apologies, I've been kind of lax on that. Been all over the world, literally. I'm just trying to get my feet back on the ground for a short time. No more plans on going anywhere, although it's been a fun year. We just got back from Florida, just got back from the iCast show. Thanks to our friends at Costa Sunglasses. See what's out there. Had a great meeting with them down at iCast, and very happy to be on board with Costa Sunglasses. Quality eyewear. Bar none. And had a fun time meeting them down there. Also, thanks to our friends at Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. Time, premium antler growth time, and time to get your Lucky Buck out right now. But make sure you go to lucky-buck.com to check on, to see where it's, you know, where you can use it in your area. They have all everything listed. Abe does a great job of updating all the places in the United States and the rules as to how you can use Lucky Buck. HHA Sports, the single pin archery site kings. Those are the great guys out of Wisconsin. And of course, our friends at MUCC protecting us, protecting our rights to hunt and fish and trap in the state of Michigan. And MUCC.org is where you can find them. But back from iCast, and what's cool about all these shows, I know we talk about, you know, the people we see. I was there for like 2 hours. All throughout the whole show. That was it. That's all the time I really got to spend down there. Of course, some great quality time with Costa. Saw the guys from Wicked Tuner and some of the guys from Duck Commander. But my good friend David A. Rose, outdoor writer and fishing guide, was down there working with some of his people that he works for, or under, rather. And David, you took me on a tour of the Plano site, which, man, how many new SKUs are there? Was it like 52 or 55 new SKUs in just soft side tackle alone, tackle boxes alone? Welcome, sir.
Well, thank you very much. And yes, 55, I do believe. Just in, like you say, just in new tackle, just in soft-sided tackle boxes. And, I mean, they're always innovating. They're always coming up. I mean, compared to the tackle bags, the tackle boxes, the tackle totes, whatever, of yesteryear, it's just amazing how organized we can be.
Well, you know, organized and fashion conscious.
Well, yes, they have, you know, they, just for an example, they have a ladies line where they just didn't just put fancy pink colors on there and call it a ladies bag. They actually design different things. I mean, they, yeah, there's some thought put into these things. And like you say, stylish. Every color under the rainbow, just about.
No, and it was good to see because, look, I've got like one ginormous, not Plano, tackle box that I use. And I'm looking at it going, it's huge. It's got a lot of great tackle, but it's like one species. You know, it's like pretty much a bass tackle box, and I really don't fish bass much, so I'm trying to figure out, well, maybe I need something new. And looking at all the stuff from Plano, maybe I need to look at that line a little bit more seriously and then just get something that's all encompassing.
Yeah, I mean, what you can do, and this saves money, and it saves a lot of organization, you buy a real nice plain old soft-sided tackle bag, you know, and you can put your, you know, how big you want is up to you, you know, something you can carry, or maybe you buy a large one for in the truck or in the boat, and then you got a small one for when you're going in your buddy's boat or something. But anyway, then all you got to do is buy the stowaway boxes that go, you know, on the inside. You buy a few extra of those, so then you can say, okay, today I'm going to be fishing bass, and I've got these couple here that are bass, kind of my bass lures, and then you're, man, I'm going to go out with my good friend Ed, and we're going to go walleye fishing. So you grab your walleye boxes and put them in that tote. So yeah, there's a lot of organizational options.
There are, and what, I mean, how many different ways can you possibly design or reinvent a tackle box? This is not a dig on Plano by any stretch, but I mean, there are so many options. How do I know, you know, what's really right for me? I mean, and not all stores are going to carry them, and it's hard to look online. So I guess it's almost an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Well, you know, a lot of it is going to be touchy-feely. Every time you go to a large outdoor retailer or a small outdoor retailer, take a look at what they got. You know, you can go to their website, too. Just look up Plano Fishing, and that whole webpage full of hunting and fishing and whatever that they make will come up. And there's good descriptions in there. They're going to tell you, you know, this has X amount of side pockets, real good for maybe your cell phone or your pliers or your this or your that, or it's waterproof or it's not. So yeah, I mean, really, it's next time you're at, like you say, every time you go to an outdoor tackle store, touchy-feely with the bags that they got, and then go online to their website, and you can see them all and get a good description.
Absolutely. Now, yeah, you were representing some other brands there as well. St. Croix Rods did very well with their fly fishing. A best in show for the fly fishing department.
Correct, and they also got a best of show on the fly rods. They just said that. Saltwater rods. Yeah, the new Mojo Bass Fly. I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to buy one.
Oh, no,
because,
see, look.
What a neat stick. A 7 foot, 11 inches, 7, 8, or 9 weight Mojo Bass. It's kind of in their line, but it's really a category all their own. It's a fly rod. It's got a moderate action, and you can put big, wet, heavy bass bugs right where they need to be. It's a really neat rod.
You know, a lot of people are taking to fly fishing. Not so much, you know, I think guys like myself, that I've been a spin cast guy, you know, my whole life. That's been my thing. But since my trip to Ireland in May, and realizing that the whole fly fishing thing really wasn't as hard as I thought it was. I mean, I hadn't picked up a fly rod, at least a real one, in 30 years. Here I'm out there fly fishing for brown trout on this lake in Ireland. And it was just like, wow, this was all the most natural thing. And it was really quite easy. And I think if I could encourage people to maybe try it again and don't grab like the entry level, you know, put together pack, put a little bit of effort into what you're getting. So that way you don't have to upgrade later. It really is not the sport that so many people misconstrue it to be.
No, when we think of fly fishing, so many times we think of the dapper young man in the twill hat, you know, and they're fly fishing with dry flies for trout or maybe a nymph. But, I mean, fly fishing encompasses every single fish species, you know, even rough fish, carp and suckers, they're catching them on flies, you know, that kind of stuff. And sometimes fly, when they say fly, you're thinking of a bug. You're, like I said, you're thinking of that topwater, but, you know, it streamers or little crustacean type flies. I mean, all it is, it's basically fur and feather, some synthetics that have been melded into a, well, I'm going to call it a lure. That's going to upset the fly guys, but it's a fly, and sometimes that slow fall or whatever, it will actually outfish conventional tackle because they're just the way it falls, the way it flutters, the way whatever happens. So, yeah, fly fishing is not, there's that persona that goes along with it.
Sure,
you know?
It does.
And yeah, if you get out of that, just like you say, this Mojo Bass fly rod, well, it can be used for so many different things. Big bugs for trout or tarpon even or something. You know, you get the 9 weight and you get there's just, you know, the just because it has the word bass on it doesn't mean it's only a bass rod. And that's, again, just getting out of that little thought process.
Absolutely. David A. Rose is our guest. Wildfishing.com is where you can find him or on the many pages of different outdoor publications. He is joining us. We're both back. Dave got back earlier than me from ICAST, but we're back here in Michigan and doing a little recap on the ICAST show that was in Florida last week. And it seems like a year ago that it happened. But
I know, it was a week ago today I flew back, you know.
Exactly. And then, of course, I'm posting pictures of potato chips with a Chesapeake Bay crab seasoning.
And I can't believe you didn't bring any back. That's the most upsetting thing.
We didn't find them after that, Dave. Sorry. Whole other segment coming your way. We're going to speak with David A. Rose. We are Wild Michigan. Brought to you by the Michigan United Conservation Clubs. Check them out, mucc.org. Check us out as well online, wildmichiganradio.com, and on Facebook and on Twitter. All about the Wild Michigan.
Join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an hour to time. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez on the Michigan Talk Network, brought to you in part by Costa Sunglasses. See what's out there. Great, great eyewear. And we had, again, our great meeting with them down at ICAST. And we are back now covering, kind of recapping the show a little bit. David A. Rose is our guest, outdoor writer. You can find him at wildfishing.com. Dave, what stood out in your mind? You got to see the whole show. I was like running through it real quickly and, you know, dodging all the free beer that they were passing out. And okay, I got hit by one. But, I mean, I really didn't get the in-depth look that I normally get at these shows. And sometimes I think because you have the saltwater industry there mixed in with the freshwater industry, it's hard to be selective as to what you want to look at. I mean, we don't saltwater fish here in Michigan. But when I'm down in Florida, I love taking the opportunity. And but what did you see for freshwater that really kind of stuck out? Was there anything at all?
Well, you know, there was really nothing. There was no huge, like, wow, this is new, you know. But what is new, and I noticed, all these rod companies, you know, we talked about St. Croix, and they produce some great stuff, and there was other rod companies. What amazes me is just how light in weight and sensitive and just how nice some of these fishing rods are that the freshwater angler can buy now. It's truly amazing. I mean, just, you know, you think back in the, well, some of you that are old enough can think back to the 70s and early 80s and how, you know, we were making a jump from fiberglass into graphite, and then boron tried for a while, and then back to graphite. But now, just, you know, the way technology is and how they can meld these graphite fibers, I won't say not melt, but meld with other products, and just some amazing fishing rods out there.
You know, I had the opportunity to, we met Scott Estes and the guys from Denali Rods at the Bassmaster Classic, and we saw them down there as well at ICAST. You know, they've been producing bass rods for a little while now, and they're starting to get known in the market. And it's hard to make, you know, a big impact in the market with fishing rods, because there are so many and so many well-established companies. But, you know, again, he's a Southern company. He's out of Oklahoma, and, you know, they produce bass stuff. But they're starting to produce walleye rods now, too. They're looking at design for walleye. I've been getting under his skin since, like, you know, what was it, March that I was in at the Bassmaster Classic. So, you know what? You need some walleye rods. And now they're working on them. I don't think it was because of me, but they're starting to work on it and maybe hit that northern market.
Yeah, you know, it's like you say, it's a difficult job because there's some. I mean, some of these companies are very, like you say, established. They've been around a long time, and they've all had their ups and downs. You know, they've tried different things, and some rods were big hits, and some rods weren't. But the companies that are still there, I mean. Yeah, I mean, they have a big expanse. They do multi-species, for, like you say, the saltwater to the all the different kinds of rods that we can do, you know, we can use right here in Michigan, as an example, from trolling to, you know, spinning to casting to each kind of species. So yeah, anybody that starts up in a rod company, it's really about just producing a really high quality product.
Now, names aside, okay, we know St. Croix, we know G. Loomis, and the other ones that are out there. But when someone is looking for a rod, you know, you see people, you know, whipping that rod, boy, that's got some good action. You know, if fish doesn't do that. You know, a fish doesn't jiggle your rod for you. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm looking for a new rod, what am I looking for? What are the basic simple tests that I can do when I'm out and not snap something?
Well, the first thing you do, and this is going to sound weird, if you're going to buy a new reel, pick your reel out first. Or if you have a reel that you like and you want to buy a new rod to go with it, actually take that reel with you. And the reason is, you know, your reel, they make reels with all different weights to them. You know, some are heavier, some are lighter, some are this, some are that. And a rod needs to balance in your hand. You don't want it tip heavy. You don't want it butt heavy. You don't want to be fighting that because you lose sensitivity and whatnot. So what you do, first thing you do is you either bring your reel in or pick one out. Then you go to the rod and say, okay, I'm going to be, I'm going to go walleye fishing, and I like to jig. And so, you know, you talk to the people behind the counter, and they're going to help you out trying to find a walleye rod that's going to be perfect for jigging, you know, lighter tip, medium light action, whatever it is. But yeah, you want it to balance with that reel, and I think that's the thing people missed most.
Okay, now what about what is the litmus test, so to speak, for action? You know, you see, now I've seen, you know, some of my pro angler friends, they take a very different approach when they look at the action of a rod. They kind of press it down and put a little bend in it, looking straight down, you know, on the ground and kind of doing that little press and bend. Mm-hmm. It's hard to explain on radio. It's radio. I'm sorry. I wish I could do, wish I could do this better, but, you know, it's like I'm trying to describe how to find a rod the right way.
You know, they're seeing how limber the tip is. They're seeing where the butt, where the beef of the rod might be. Or, you know, maybe if there's no beef at all. I mean, because every, I mean, for the golfers out there, you just don't take one golf club. You don't even take two golf clubs. You take a set. And, I mean, everything to make a ball go as far as it can to everything to make it, you know, just a putter. So fishing is kind of like that. So you're utilizing the action compared to the lure that you have. So you jig with lightweight lures. You're going to want something in that light to medium light action, you know, medium action rods, they're going to be, or I should say medium power rods. So they're going to, maybe for crankbaits or small lures. And then, you know, you got your medium heavies. So if you're casting spinner baits or large heavy baits. So really, a rod is based on two things. Again, matching it to your reel and then utilizing that rod to the type of lure that you're going to be casting on it. You can't cast a big heavy musky rod, or excuse me, a musky lure on an ultralight rod very well. And if you did, you're not going to be able to set the hook. So it's all about the lure that you're using.
All right, David A. Rose is our guest here. Wild Michigan brought to you by Costa Sunglasses. See what's out there. And a link to CostaDelMar.com is on our website at WildMichiganRadio.com. Dave, real quickly, what's going on? What's hot and heavy in the Traverse City area that you are in right now? What's going on fishing-wise?
Well, you know, the salmon are just starting to show up in the Great Lakes surrounding Traverse City, from everything from East and West Grand Traverse Bay, you know, Frankfurt and all that kind of stuff. It's not going to be a banner year, probably, but mm-hmm. there's still salmon to be had. You're not going to go out there and maybe catch, you know, a boatload of 25 fish, but you're going to get some salmon. So that's kind of been, things are starting to really go up with that. And then, of course, the bug hatches are over and whatnot, so the bass and the walleye fishing is really starting to take off again. Those fish are starting to get hungry again. So, yeah, those are the two prime, or, you know, three prime candidates right there.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm looking forward to getting out and maybe doing some fishing. I complain I've been fishing four times this year. But they've been quality spots.
Yeah, and you know what? And just in the 2 hours that you were at the show, we talked about that same thing. And of course, you know, you're always invited.
Well, dude, I appreciate that. I've been David and I have been chasing each other to fish together for almost 9 years now, and it's all right. We're friends at least. We get to see each other in other states.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's always at a show. When else do we see each other?
Exactly. David A. Rose, look for him. DavidARose.com, WildFishing.com. Appreciate your time as always, sir. We look forward to getting out and seeing you again. Maybe not at a show, but again, look for Dave. You can find him on our website. Look for him at Meet the Experts at WildMichiganRadio.com.
And you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, book knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale. Around here.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. Brought to you by HHA Sports, the number one name in single-pin archery sight technology. Check them out, HHASports.com. A link on our website, WildMichiganRadio.com. Getting ready. You know, if you haven't picked up your bow yet, you're kind of not alone. I've only done mine once. I've only picked it up once. But October 1st is going to be in the same spot it's always been since the keeping of time. Okay? It should not be a surprise to you. Just like November 15th. Okay? Sight the guns in now, then put them away. So you don't have the excuse that November 14th, I got to sign in. So, and the reason I talk about these things is because deer season. We just got some numbers from the Michigan DNR about a drop in harvest. And of course, with a drop in harvest too, you get a drop in hunters. And we have Chad Stewart, the deer management specialist with Michigan DNR, joining us here on the show. Chad, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Durant. Thanks for having me.
Oh, not at all, man. We're going to get some info from you because you are the deer management specialist, a title that, that's what you do, plain and simple. But there's so much more than just the management of the deer. You've been dealing with the CWD issue. You're dealing with numbers that came in from last year's harvest. We're down a little bit, you know, approximately 329,000 deer from 615,000 hunters. Both numbers have been much larger in the past. But, you know, we were at over 700,000 hunters in the past. We've dropped over 100,000. Our deer numbers have dropped also, but it's not only because of the lack of hunter retention. There's been some weather issues involved with that.
Yeah, and that's no more true than up north. Up north, specifically in the UP, two of the last three, and you could even make an argument for last year, you know, with the hunting season was going on, they've had just really severe winters that really contributed to a drop in the deer population. And then once that deer population does drop, there's some factors that, sort of prevent it from coming back up. But, obviously when that deer herd just keeps getting hit over and over again with really severe winters, the numbers tend to stay down. And when numbers tend to stay down, people obviously don't harvest as much and ultimately drop out of hunting. So it's a difficult situation up there. But, yeah, the UP's harvest was down about 36% just last year. They really took it on the chin last year.
Chad Stewart is our guest from the Michigan DNR here on Wild Michigan. Chad, it used to be the UP was the place to go for deer. But as things have changed, as management has changed, we have seen so many bigger deer in southern Michigan counties. Some of those areas are starting to get flooded with hunters, and we're getting more activity in those areas. At the same time, across the state, we got hammered. We've been hammered not like we've seen since the 70s in the past couple of years with snow. And across the board, it makes it very difficult not only to get out, but when you've got snow-covered ground in late October, it's still bow season. Not many folks are going to be able to get out because we're not prepared for that, especially if we're just bow hunters specifically.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, it's a change from when, people were hunting, even 10, 15, 20 years ago. The whole makeup of the season has been changing drastically. And there's, last year, perfect example, we had a very wet fall down south. And when you have a wet fall, it sort of stops crop harvest in its tracks. So you have a lot more standing corn. That's where the deer tend to congregate. People go out, don't see the deer numbers. Think deer numbers are low, and maybe they are. Some places that's still probably justified. But, they're still out there. They're just sort of inaccessible because they're in those crop fields. So it really changes the way people are hunting, whether it's weather or landscape changes. And hunters need to adapt. And that just sort of goes to prove that, preseason scouting, there's really no substitute for. So you can sort of adjust to those changing conditions year to year.
No, and that is very true. That holds very true to what we do as deer hunters, because knowing the area, knowing the patterns of the deer is a small part. But when you are faced with conditions that the farmers can't change, a lot of guys and gals wait for the corn to come down. Well, if corn's not coming down till January, then it's not going to do you a lot of good.
Yeah, that really makes it tough. When you have an area that is pretty inaccessible to hunters, provides food and cover for a deer, of course, that's where they're going to go, and that really provides a challenge for deer hunters. So, and likewise, when the weather conditions start to turn, and you know, last year the UP got hit with a severe winter storm, literally right before the firearm season, and that just really impacted hunter effort up there as well. So, there's a lot of things that are really outside of hunter's control. And you know, that's why maybe we have a little bit longer season. So, you know, if we lose a weekend here, a weekend there, maybe we can kind of recover that, you know, another time.
No, I've never been one to complain about the length of time for Michigan seasons. You know, we get a lot of infighting. Hunters don't like how long bow hunters have. Some people don't like when the youth season is or the veterans hunt. You know, put into perspective, look what you're arguing about. You're arguing within yourselves about what we all love to do. And to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. A lot of issues that we're having also is people complaining about the licensing structure. If you look back, we've not had a significant increase since 1996. In 2006, when we started the show, we went through the same thing. You know, there was a lot of questions about licensing and whatnot and the structure and how much we're getting charged. But when you take it, yes, it probably could have been done incrementally, but we can't look back on that now. So, and even complaining about licensing to me is just a moot point.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, as obviously with anything, you know, costs don't stay the same, you know, whether it's a gallon of milk or, you know, it's pretty easy to see how gas prices can fluctuate. Well, you know, Michigan hunters have been pretty fortunate over time to have really stable license fees in the structure. So, you know, we did make a change last year. And, you know, if you're a multi-season hunter and a multi-species hunter, the impact was sort of softened a little bit. But if you're strictly a deer hunter, it did cost you a little bit more. In the grand scheme of things, you know, you're talking about a minimal price, you know, a deer license, $20. And, you know, and then a small game license, which is like $11, and it gives you months of recreational opportunities that can provide food to your table. You know, I challenge you to go to a Michigan or Michigan State football game for about $3, and that's only about 3 or 4 hours. So,
yeah.
You know, when you put it into perspective and what you're getting, it's really still tremendous value.
Absolutely. Deer management specialist Chad Stewart is on the phone with us here on Wild Michigan. How did last year, too, when we saw in the UP all the weather, when you're allowed supplemental feeding, you know you got a problem up there.
Yeah, and that was one of the changes that was asked for and was granted by our Natural Resources Commission to start the supplemental feeding a little bit earlier than they previously had. And that's a direct response to the lack of sightings, the reduced deer numbers that were seen during the hunting season up there. And ultimately, that those same reasons are what facilitated the change this year, where archery hunters are not allowed to take an antlerless deer on a deer license or deer combination license up there. So all of these things are sort of geared toward, you know, just helping out the deer and trying to get them to make it through the winter a little bit better or recover a little bit better, because they've been on a pretty downward trajectory of late.
All right. Chad Stewart is our guest here. He is the deer management specialist for the Michigan DNR. We're going to speak more with Chad coming up in the next segment. We're going to talk a little bit about a second deer being found with CWD in Meridian Township. Also, if you want to get your antlerless permits in, applications go towards till the end of the month. I encourage you to do so right now. You're listening to Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
This is Larry Weissen, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
Mr. Whitetail, here on Wild Michigan, Larry Weissen. Great interview, great guy, and a wealth of information with whitetail deer. Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez. We are brought to you in part by our friends at HHA Sports. Great, great guys, man, out of Wisconsin. American-made products, and clearly the tops in single-pin archery sight technology. And as we talk more about deer hunting, we're getting ready, you know, talking a little bit about bow season. Maybe I'm getting the itch to pick up the bow a little bit. Normally, I would shoot year-round. Just really haven't had, you know, that that drive the past couple of years, but maybe that'll all change. Chad Stewart is our guest, deer management specialist for the Michigan DNR, and you talk about a guy that's been busy because of some things we never wanted to see again in Michigan. We did have a case of CWD on a private facility here a couple of years ago in Kent County. That was on a deer farm. Now, mind you, not all of these deer farms are the same. Okay, there are some prime examples, great examples, like our friends at Conquest that that work very hard and diligent to make sure everything's right, and then there are others that that things happen on. But this case is different. We found CWD in one deer in Meridian Township here a few weeks ago. Now we have a second deer found. And Chad, here's my question, and I know this is probably being done. Are there tests being done on the second CWD positive deer to see if these two are genetically linked?
Absolutely. The tissue is already at one of the professor's labs at Michigan State, and we're in the process of looking to see if there's any relatedness or not between those first two deer.
Now, we found the first doe, was she 5 years old?
She was 6 years
old.
She was ages 6 years old. She was classically symptomatic, so extremely thin. She was only 93 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously the listening audience knows that a six-year-old deer should be a lot heavier than 93 pounds. She was unafraid of people, sort of exhibiting neurological problems, and ultimately that's the one that came back initially positive. The second deer was a two-year-old buck. And to look at it, whether you were the sharpshooter that took it or the pathologist of the lab who did the necropsy and took the samples, it looked otherwise healthy. You would not know that this animal had chronic wasting disease. And that's what makes this disease really problematic to manage. It's that it can stay hidden for months to years before it really starts showing its head.
Chad Stewart is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Chad, in this specific area, and we're still finding out so much about CWD, about how it's transmitted. Of course, a few years ago, we had a 3-year period where we could not bait or supplemental feed because we were worried about contact. Now we're finding out that these prions, however you want to say it, can be in the ground and then come up in certain plants, be ingested by the deer, and that is how it's being transmitted. And some of the questions that are being brought is this a possibility of somebody bringing a CWD-infected animal, processing it, burying the parts, and it come back up through the grass that these two deer ate or could have possibly eaten?
That is absolutely one of the possibilities that are we're trying to explore, and chances are we'll never really know how it happened. But we know that the first animal was an Ingham County deer. She was born here and lived here her whole life. The disease obviously has not been here throughout the course of Michigan history. So it was introduced into this landscape somehow, and how that was done, you know, we just don't know. But certainly that is one method of exposure, is an animal that has it is deceased, and those, as it begins to rot and degrade away, those prions get released into the soil, and they actually become more infectious once they bind to certain types of soil. And deer eat dirt all the time. You know,
sure.
Anybody that has a mineral lick or any basic knowledge of whitetail knows that, you know, they pull a plant out of the ground that has roots and soil on it, and it goes down the hatch. So that's one method of exposure for the disease.
You know, and there's a lot of, you know, speculation, and I don't want to be one of those caught. Again, this is just one of those things that came to mind as a possibility of the whole thing. But there are many other ways that they can transmit. But this being a second deer, And hopefully what we find out is that this is linked genetically, but now you have to wonder how many offspring has this doe had, and it's going to be a mystery. Are people in the area where this first and second deer have been found, have they been very receptive to, you know, sharpshooters being out shooting deer in the middle of summer?
For the most part, yeah, absolutely. Now it's like anything else. Sharpshooting is a very divisive management tool. A lot of people understand the need for it. A lot of people don't understand the need for it. And that's fine. We've been trying to do a lot of communication efforts, trying to describe why we feel that's necessary. You know, these deer are basically in a suburban area that are very inaccessible to hunting and therefore difficult to get in volume through traditional hunting methods. So that's why we're taking the approach that we're doing, is to get samples and to see what kind of infection rate we're dealing with here. But we do have a lot of landowner cooperation. The township that we found, the Meridian Township, has been nothing short of phenomenal to work with. They have been very receptive, very proactive, and true willing partners. So we've been, we have no complaints on the process of managing this, because we've been getting a lot of support and a lot of participation.
Now, I know that Meridian Township was receptive to a limited deer season just because the population had gotten so big in that area, and rightfully so. When people, you know, a lot of people, maybe they weren't too keen on deer hunting to begin with. Oh, wait, it's affecting the landscaping that I'm paying a ton of money for. Now it's okay.
Yeah, and you know, that's one sort of, I guess, pro about where it happened, is that, you know, the township has already gone through a lot of this deer management discussion. So people have been educated on it. People understand what overabundant deer herds mean, and I would classify that as where we're at within this township, because there are a lot of deer right in that area. So people have a general understanding for what a lot of deer can do, and because they've gone through this process and they've started the hunting season, they realize that, you know, taking a few deer is not a bad thing. There are still some communities that struggle with that, and it would have been more of a challenge to work in some of those communities, but Meridian Township has been great.
Some of the things, speaking with Chad Stewart from the Michigan DNR, he is the deer management specialist. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, and if you have questions regarding this. And some of the, you know, we get people that have questions and conspiracy theories. And some of the theories and questions that are being brought up are, who is doing the testing, and should a outside source be doing the testing? Because, look, there are people that are going to see, that we've already seen. It drives me crazy. Oh, the DNR planted these deer. Why in God's name would the DNR want to plant a CWD-infected deer? There's no benefit to that, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah, that was a theory when I first heard it. It caught me sideways, because I can't imagine, you know, we've got staff that are going out in June and July and picking up roadkill deer. And I can think of about a million other things I'd rather do than pick up a hot, bloated deer. But, you know, to get back to your initial question, every animal that comes back positive is confirmed by an outside source. Actually, the first deer that became positive, we tested that three different times through different laboratory techniques before we sent it to a national veterinary services lab in Iowa for final confirmation. And those people basically look at every positive CWD animal that's found in the country and probably North America as well. They see a lot of deer, and they have the final say, and ultimately they confirm what our labs are finding as well. So it is actually tested by us locally, but also sure, a second independent party as well.
All right. Chad Stewart, deer specialist, Michigan DNR, deer management specialist. I want to get the title correct. Thank you so much for joining us. Chad, real quickly, is there a website we can go to?
Yeah. If anybody wants to have any information on chronic wasting disease, just go to www.michigan.gov/CWD. We update it weekly.
All right. There it is. Chad Stewart, part of the Michigan DNR. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks to Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, HHA Sports, Costa Sunglasses, and of course the MUCC for bringing you Wild Michigan and our website, wildmichiganradio.com.